This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 18th of September 2015. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 18th of September, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. Your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Noel Thorpe Tracy. Main headlines this week are Parents Protest Patrol Officers' Removal, the university housing crisis, and prison deaths spark concern. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather.
Parents protest patrol officers' removal with campaign. Pupils and parents have put their right foot forward to bring back their lollipop man with a campaign for road safety. Volunteers in high-vis jackets are marshalling children over the busy crossing at Week Primary School, in the absence of its long-standing patrol officer, Robin Pritchard, who took voluntary redundancy under county-wide plans to reduce patrols. The school has written to the county council to warn of risks to children as the parents' battle gathers momentum. Visiting week on Friday, County Councillor Jackie Porter said, "I can see how dangerous it is, because there's so much to look out for." Head teacher Michelle Loughrey said, "The school is working with Hampshire County Council and has written to ask them to reconsider their decision not to replace the school crossing patrol. The priority is the children's safety and well-being, which is why we have written to Hampshire. We have been offered a special assembly to teach the children about using the zebra crossing, which we will be accepting. And there's a picture of a lot of children in their uniform waving placards, backed by parents, gathered outside Week Primary School on Stony Lane to highlight the issue of road safety following the ending of the school crossing patrol."
Thank you. And I've got the university housing crisis. Winchester risks becoming a dormitory town with low-income families priced out of housing. It has been warned as the university's annual shortage of beds drives up private rents. More freshers than ever are being pushed onto former council estates by a lack of campus flats, with up to 80 students on waiting lists expecting to spend the first few weeks of their university careers in hotels. Meanwhile, parents have said Winchester University students finding their own homes in Stanmore, Winnell and Highcliffe are being charged spiralling rents. It has led to a warning over affordability from the city's civic chief, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, who is considering extending a clampdown on Stanmore landlords to other areas. Councillor Godfrey said, "We do need to make sure that housing of all types remains affordable for those that need to live here. We don't want to drive people out and become a dormitory town, whether it's for students or people working in London." He added, "If you have too many students and don't improve your facilities, then word quickly spreads among students that a particular institution has large classes or inadequate facilities, not enough face time with teachers, not enough housing or whatever." Parent Andrew Mycock, whose daughter asked not to be named, said she was completely and utterly distraught when she was told a fortnight before Freshers' Week that the university couldn't offer her her bed. Mr. Mycock said, "Four groups of students came to view one property already, and the landlord was basically playing each one off against the other to get the highest price." Last year, the Chronicle reported how more than 100 Winchester students from a record intake were put up miles away in other towns. No students have been placed outside the city this year, but the university has suggested freshers find their own digs as far away as Southampton and Basingstoke as they scramble to manage a waiting list which is known to have surpassed 300 students. Meanwhile, estate agents facing unprecedented demand have stepped up their efforts to buy more homes for next year. Kim Bone, letting manager of Goadsby, said the firm ran out of stock earlier than ever and students are now spilling out into week. Neil Marriott, Winchester University's deputy vice-chancellor, said, Part of our success in attracting students is the quality and quantity of on-campus accommodation, and of course our excellent performance for student satisfaction in the National Student Survey. We have met our guarantee to provide university accommodation to all students who held a firm offer of study and applied by the May deadline.
And here we have prison deaths spark concern. The deaths of four prisoners within 6 weeks at Winchester Prison have sparked widespread concern. Mohammed Amami Furashani, 40, became the fourth inmate to die at the jail this summer, following Daryl Hargrave, Jason Payne, and well-known father's rights campaigner Hayden Burton. Mr. Amami Furashani, from Redlinch in Wiltshire, was found hanging on September the 2nd, days before he was due to appear in court on a firearms possession charge. An inquest was opened last week and is due to resume on February the 9th, 2016. The deaths come after the Chronicle reported how the Independent Monitoring Board raised fears about an atmosphere of gang culture and increased boredom on some wings. The IMB said the Category B jail is very much a work in progress and much remains to be done in December. The report noted concerns over lack of staff as the ratio between officers and inmates dropped from 1 to 22 to 1 to 30. Now, prison reform campaigners have expressed concern over the deaths. The Howard League for Penal Reform says the prison has a near impossible task to keep inmates safe whilst coping with increased prisoner numbers and staff cuts. Chief Executive Francis Crook said, "It is deeply concerning that four people have died in one prison in only 2 months. Winchester faces the near impossible task of keeping people safe while struggling to cope with rising prison numbers, chronic overcrowding and deep staff cuts." Prison Reform Trust Director Juliet Lyon said, "Every death is a tragedy for the families and staff involved. Despite some success in reducing the number of deaths by suicide in prison over the last few years and the invaluable support of Samaritan listeners and safer custody staff, last year saw a record number of deaths and over a third were self-inflicted. Massive cuts in staffing, increased violence and the use of psychoactive drugs have all taken their toll. The mainstay of any prison system is to ensure that people stay safe and are treated humanely. Ministers must heed the warning signs and roll back this rising tide."
That concludes the headline stories, and now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Your Say, My Winchester, historical items, Belgorum Diary, first person, and editorial comment. And we'll start with the death notices. Atherton, Doris Atherton, peacefully on the 9th of September 2015, aged 90.
Barnes, Margaret Barnes, passed away peacefully at home on 10th of September 2015, aged 75 years.
Carpenter, Roy, passed away suddenly on the 3rd of September 2015, aged 81 years.
Mundy, Neil Mundy, passed away on the 2nd of September, aged 73.
Monday, Sheila Monday, passed away peacefully on the 6th of September, 2015, aged 82.
Wood, Nicholas, passed away suddenly on the 11th of August, 2015, aged 63.
And now I have Christian comment by the Reverend Graham Bokett, Where Heaven and Earth Collide. I've had a brilliant summer. One great highlight has been to visit Ephesus in Turkey, although, and I have to write this in case she reads this paper, this only closely rivals my youngest daughter's university graduation in Leeds. It goes without saying the architectural comparisons between Leeds and Ephesus are, of course, evident for anyone to see should they visit this magnificent northern city. Ephesus, even though a ruin, is simply an amazing place full of ancient monuments and incredible architecture, so much so it really is difficult to take it all in. Another simply amazing thing to know is that the first Christian community in Ephesus was founded by St. John, Yes, I know. The very same St. John who wrote the mind-bogglingly brilliant gospel, delving the deepest mysteries of God himself. That St. John. He wrote his gospel here in Ephesus, and he, St. John, is buried in a tomb not too distant from the ancient city. St. Paul also spent some considerable time in Ephesus, about 3 years, on his way back from visiting the city of Corinth in Greece. I walked along the same streets as St. John and St. Paul. I stood where they more than probably stood. I gazed upon the Christian markers set into the marble and stone that identified people and households as Christian. People and households who may have come to faith because they knew, saw, heard those two great Christian saints. It doesn't stop there either. Just outside Ephesus, on one of the high mountains, is the house attributed to be the home of St. Mary, the mother of Jesus, Mary the Theotokos, Mary the God-bearer. And now I have to say, by the time we visited Mother Mary's house, my wife's patience was beginning, in an ecclesiastical sense, to fade. But I persevered, and I have to say it was worth every moment of disapproval. St. Mary's house, as a place, was breathtaking. I was not allowed to linger, as I was robustly moved along by a large paramilitary-looking fellow who seemed too important to argue with. But the space was what I can only describe in Celtic spirituality terms as a thin place, a place where the boundaries between heaven and earth collide. In such spaces, people can seek God and feel God's power in spine-tingling otherworldliness, like being punched in the chest by God's very presence, literally breathtaking. This is what it felt like in this little room. As you come out of the house where Mary, the Mother of God, once lived, all are invited to light a candle and to write a prayer to be put on the prayer wall, a wall 60 foot long and 6 foot tall, and covered head to foot in prayer cards. I do not know how many prayers there were that day for peace, but my suspicion, is that this was the predominant prayer, along with the one that went around my head for the rest of the day. Hail Mary, full of grace, our Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women. Pray for us sinners. The Reverend Graham Burkett. We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contribute, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all one word, all lowercase, no spaces, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. There are 8 letters this week, and Jane's going to start with the first one.
The first letter from Robert Hutchison is called Council Shake-Up. Sir, I was a county councillor in Shropshire from 1989 to 93 and a Winchester City councillor from 2010 to 2015. Local government in England has many weaknesses. It suffers from the stupidities of an over-centralised state and is increasingly victim to governments that devolve responsibilities without the resources needed to meet them. Current cuts in public expenditure will do lasting damage. Local government also has dysfunctional structures, evident in Hampshire in the inability of the county and district councils to work effectively together. Also, Winchester has no town council, a democratic deficit that needs to be rectified. And then there are the elected councillors. In my view, most of them are admirably public-spirited, but they are in no way representative of the citizens in their areas. Younger people are almost completely unrepresented. Also, too many councillors go on too long, in more than one sense. Winchester City Council is ill-equipped for the challenges of the 21st century. It is losing out on valuable income streams from renewable energy and is failing to prepare for a society that should be conserving energy and investing more in public health as well as in renewables. Getting many more cars out of the city centre would be a major step towards a healthier, more vibrant and pleasant city. Many city council officers do a good job in difficult circumstances, but there has been a widespread loss of trust in the city council. This partly derives from a stream of misguided cabinet decisions, but also from the fact that the senior officers are not sufficiently well qualified to organise and manage major development projects, a weakness compounded by an unwillingness on the part of the members and officers to learn from the many architecture and environment professionals in the city that have the experience and expertise to guide the way to better decisions. There needs to be a restructuring of the senior city council staff with new expertise brought in at a senior level on the art of placemaking and on the changing energy economy. Big mistakes have been made in recent years. Big opportunities remain. And that's from Robert Hutchison, Clifton Road, Winchester.
Vehicular value. And this is from Councillor Roy Perry of the Hampshire County Council. Sir, Hampshire County Council's new fleet of leased pool cars have been purchased as replacements for the old pool cars, as of letters September the 10th. With less impact on the environment, lower fuel consumption and running costs, they offer a much more efficient alternative. There are 19 of these cars available for registered staff to use for essential work commitments. These measures have been taken as part of the County Council's wider efficiencies programme to reduce overall running costs and find more efficient ways of delivering services, providing better value for money for Hampshire's council taxpayers. Councillor Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
And Rosemary Poole writes about a need for restriction. Sir, I was interested to read in this week's Chronicle that there is talk of a green belt being created around Winchester to safeguard existing green gaps between some of our villages. This is good news if ever it comes to pass, but in addition, and before it's too late, I feel it's imperative to set up a limit on the amount of housing in Winchester. A town overburdened with people and cars is not a happy one, and even before Barton Palm Farm and Silver Hill are built, the roads are already a nightmare and the town often unpleasantly full. Rosemary Poole, St James's Villas, Winchester.
And Peter Hargreaves writes, not around here. Sir, while Winchester citizens have been plunged into mass hysteria over accepting Syrian refugees into their homes, it begs the question how a highly educated populace of middle and upper class citizens cannot see the acute folly of their intentions. Most of the Syrian refugees will come from totally different backgrounds and lifestyles to Winchester citizens. The impact this could have on family life and the long-term consequences for family members and also the refugees has not been properly thought through. It needs to be considered that many of the refugees will be admitted into the UK with only the minimum of background history and security checks. Recently, the country's top police officer, Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, warned that the large number of immigrants arriving in Britain was causing strain because they found it difficult to integrate. Inevitably, I will be accused of being heartless, or even worse, after we all witnessed the heartbreaking picture of the Syrian boy lying dead on the beach. But that is precisely why I'm against the leader of the City Council's plea for citizens to take Syrian refugees into their homes, Chronicle, September the 10th. It is not the answer. So, what is the answer? I was very impressed with MP George Hollingbury's letter from Westminster, in which he describes and supports David Cameron's proposals for the problem. This is the right path and will benefit the refugees far more than other hysterical ideas. I suggest that all those worthy people planning to take refugees into their homes should firstly read Mr. Hollingbury's letter in the Chronicle before making a final decision. If they really want to do something to avoid children and parents drowning at sea and others having to walk hundreds of miles to freedom, then they should support Cameron and ignore hysterical calls from council leaders who seem to fail in most things they undertake. Congratulations to George Hollingbury. At the risk of some unpopularity, he was prepared to stick to the government's policies for dealing with the situation. Meanwhile, the fence-sitting Winchester MP stays firmly glued to the fence. Not one peep from him, nor guidance for his constituents. And that was from Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Homes Unsuitable, write Noel and Karen McCleary. Sir, your readers will be aware that an application to build houses on Topfield, Kingsworthy, was rejected on 9 grounds, but by the Winchester City Council Planning Committee on March the 26th, 2015. The application was resubmitted shortly afterwards and is to be considered by the Planning Committee on September the 17th, 2015. Little has changed in 6 months, but this time, having considered all the same factors, planning officers are recommending acceptance. How can this be? Who has the authority to direct the officers to reach a different conclusion this time? Can an exposed and isolated site that was deemed unsuitable for affordable housing be suitable for affordable rented housing? If so, this is a sad commentary of how the comfort and needs of tenants are viewed. Applications have been refused in 2001, the local plan inspector said. The site is very elevated and is exposed to view and thus unsuitable for development on environmental and landscape grounds. And in 2005. In 2008, when permission was given for 25 houses on part of this site, it was stated, the principle of an exception site for 25 units of affordable housing was considered to be at the upper limits of what would be considered acceptable in policy terms. That development has now been completed, and it is notable that the developer refers to it as Phase 1, which indicates that he plans to build on all this precious elevated open space. Local residents are overwhelmingly against this development. We trust that our elected representatives on the planning committee will follow precedent and will refuse to be bulldozed into a U-turn by granting permission for the Topfield development, which is not part of any plan and is outside the village envelope. Noel and Karen McCleary, Hookpit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
And here's another letter about the possible green belt. Sir, Mr. Richard Stobart's cogent letter in the Chronicle August the 27th, followed by Councillor Stephen Godfrey's proposals on the green belt, are the latest in a series of pleas you have published in your letters pages in recent years against the erosion of the countryside setting of our small historic city, so well endowed with castles, the close, cathedral and college. How ironic that it is that last which enabled a vast housing development to spill over the brow of the hill into the Pump House Lane Valley to destroy the downland setting one sees from Three Maids Hill. It could also render it near impossible to resist any builder's planning consultation's argument that there now be a northward extension of building to the planning boundaries formed by the railway and A34, since that area is or will be a townscape. The two closest Worthies and the Basingstoke Road will be a rat run to the M3 from the present and any future northward housing extensions, so that is two villages rendered less salubrious. But it is to be hoped that Councillor Godfrey's proposals could stop any such further northward extension of the Barton Farm estate, whose final name has yet to be chosen for us by Carla's marketing department, probably ignoring suggestions already made in your columns. John Duckworth, 5 Bells Lane, Nether Wallop.
And Richard Evans writes, revamp, don't relocate. Sir, the debate about the location of leisure facilities in Winchester has entered another phase with the City Council's consultation on a new recreation centre at Bar End about to start. Chronicle, September the 10th. Having lived in Hyde, I know the delights of the park in which the existing recreation centre sits. As a very occasional swimmer and the parent of a former tumble-tot, now basketball player, I know the limitations of the centre. As a twice-weekly jogger and retired squash player, I also know the benefits of modest exercise. The leisure centre debate is not simply about whether the wreck is saved or not. It is also about sport for all and well-used facilities on one hand versus elite sport on the other. There is a symbiotic relationship between River Park and the existing leisure centre. There is always a trickle of people enjoying the park that would not be there if the leisure centre was elsewhere. The park is a venue for many events that benefit from the facilities that the centre provides, and being so central provides a little buzz for the city as a whole. There is a fear that without the leisure centre, the park could become underutilised, waiting to be built on. One can feel another costly Winchester vanity project coming on with Councillor Godfrey's vague suggestion to build some sort of community cultural facility. The leisure centre is well placed for its users. It is in walking distance for a good proportion of Winchester's residents, or accessible by a single bus journey, which is important for many. Bar End is not. River Park is so close to the bulk of shops and offices in the city centre that trips to the leisure centre can be made on the way to the shops or before or after work. Certainly the car-driving users of the Bar End site could rattle down the motorway from the further reaches of Hampshire and zoom away again, but I doubt they would visit Winchester's shops, nor would Winchester's residents take much more exercise. Two things that should worry the City Council. Perhaps there is a lack of specialist sports facilities in the county, but it is obvious that one does not need to swim 50-metre lengths to enjoy the benefits of swimming. This decision must also be considered in the current financial climate. In this respect, refurbishing River Park for another 10 years' life at an average annual cost of £500,000 would seem a better choice than spending £1 million on average a year at Bar End for the next 30 years. When we can afford it, let's rebuild at River Park, even if slightly bigger, making better use of the existing space. Closing the River Park Leisure Centre forever would be a colossal loss for the city's residents. And that was from Richard Evans, Fordington Avenue, Winchester, and is accompanied by a photograph of the existing River Park Leisure Centre, supposedly in urgent need of refurbishment, with all the bicycles lined up outside and the cars and the disabled spaces waiting to use it.
And finally, a letter from Malcolm Geary. Sir, I totally concur with the previous correspondence about Ladycroft Ford, letters September the 3rd, and would add that the latest improvement to the Ford using interconnecting concrete blocks is, once again, unfinished. There should be a layer of graded stones over the top to fill the holes in the blocks, which will stabilise the whole construction and stop any movement when vehicles go over the top. Until this is done, there is also a health and safety issue that needs to be addressed, in that small children and animals, especially dogs, can trap their feet in the holes in the blocks, which I understand has already happened. The very expensive improvement works carried out by Hampshire County Council has considerably increased the traffic flow on a lane that is not only totally inadequate for the volume now using it, but the road leading from the crestbeds is so narrow that with no verge, it is quite simply dangerous for the many walkers, cyclists and children going either to or from this local beauty spot. I would be interested to know exactly how much public money has been wasted on this project so far. Malcolm Geary, Shepherdstown, Alsford. And now it's time for your say. Passers-by in the Winchester area were asked, should Winchester take in Syrian refugee families? Heather has the answers.
Elizabeth Spencer, aged 62, an accountant of Stockbridge Road, said, I think we should, in line with the general consensus that each city that's capable of taking refugees. Zafar Ullah, a student who lives in Winchester city centre, said, I think the Prime Minister's got the right end of the stick in that women and children are first priority. We can understand the political reasons, and as a country we do have a duty. Anthony Day, aged 83, retired, who lives near Chesil Street, said, My conscience suggests that we ought to take some. There's no doubt about that. And Ollie Swanston, aged 18, a student of St Faith's Road, St Cross, said, Yes, The United Kingdom is responsible for the creation of the destabilisation of that region anyway. We definitely have to deal with the consequences of our responsibility for that suffering.
Now, in the My Winchester column, James McQuart tells us what he likes and dislikes about his city. He is a freelance, he's 45, he's a freelance publishing consultant of Stony Lane Week and takes us through his favourite things. His favourite restaurant or cafe is the Chesil Rectory. I booked it for my mum's 70th and she absolutely loved it because it's got a sense of history. Favourite pub or bar is maybe Green's. I go there sometimes if I'm having a bit of a night out, but mostly because it's got tables outside. My favourite shop is Pure Home in the square. They do really unusual stuff in there. And my favourite view, I actually think it's just on the high street, looking out towards the Alfred statue. It's a busy high street, but you see greenery in the background. And my favourite building is the Hope Church, that Art Deco building opposite the car park. I just like that it's just standing there. It's almost proud of itself. And the biggest icon in Winchester, of course, is Alfred the Great. That's what I named my dog after. And Winchester's best kept secret, which I'll give away, is the City Museum, right next to the cathedral. You can do it quite quickly, but it gives you a taste of Winchester. And the best thing about Winchester, the size of it. It's surrounded by countryside, but it's quite a thriving, compact city centre, and it's not completely brand names. And the worst, I think the street market's pretty poor. Winchester's pretty busy anyway, so having that taking up all the space seems kind of pointless, selling duvets and stuff. They ought to be a bit more picky about who else has stalls. And if there was one thing I could change about the city, it would be, guess what, Barton Farm. I worry about its future because it's not very well protected. And to describe Winchester in a sentence, modern but historical. And now we're going back through the mists of time for the historical news items from our files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
And only 25 years ago was September the 14th, 1990. Firstly, homelessness on the rise. There could be as many as 150 homeless people in Winchester every night, the author of a report on homelessness in the city said this week. Many people in the city who are concerned about homelessness are preparing to organise a night shelter this winter. They do not yet have the permanent building they would like and are likely again to use church halls. The problem of homelessness is a complex one, said Mr. Michael J. Weatherly, who has written the report. It includes people like students who have to stay in a different place from night to night and battered wives. And there is, of course, now a night shelter in Winchester. The second one is Brooks, no consultation. Landscaping on the Brooks development has proceeded without consultation with the City Council, and angry members have called the developers to an early meeting to explain themselves. At the Council's Planning Committee meeting last Thursday, Mrs. Pat Edwards said she was very angry that the committee had not been consulted in the choice of trees for landscaping and the types of hard paving. "We have been presented with a fait accompli," she said. Planning Officer Mr. Nigel Green said the city officers had not encouraged the developers to go ahead without consent, only to present a complete package to the council to avoid having to look at paving, trees and other amenities individually.
And Heather's got 50 years ago.
September the 18th, 1965. Romsey joins Eastleigh. Romsey forsakes Winchester and joins forces with Eastleigh under Boundary Commission proposals published on Wednesday, which would increase the number of parliamentary constituencies in Hampshire from 14 to 16. The revised Eastleigh constituency would comprise the boroughs of Romsey and Eastleigh, the southern parishes of Romsey and Stockbridge Rural District, and the southern parishes of Winchester Rural District, stretching round the Southampton boundary down to the coast at Hamble. Boy Trapped. The courage of an 11-year-old boy who was trapped by the legs for an hour beneath the wreckage of a wooden shed and a 3.5-ton Bedford lorry at Buck Hill Sherfield English near Romsey was praised by firemen and police after they had freed him on Friday evening of last week. The boy was Peter Robert Hable, son of Mr. and Mrs. Hable of Fernley, Buck Hill, Sherfield English. Peter was working on his bicycle in a shed alongside the main A27 Romsey to Salisbury Road when the accident occurred shortly before 6 p.m. A lorry crashed into the shed, demolishing it completely.
And I've got two items from 100 years ago. September the 18th, 1915. The first is Medal for Wintonian. The term the Silent Navy is becoming almost a byword, and it is indeed true that the British Navy has accomplished great achievements without much being heard about them. Now and again things come to light which show what a stupendous part the Navy is playing in the great struggle. Some weeks ago, Mr. J. H. Higson of One Hillside Terrace, Bar End, Winchester, was made proud by the receipt of the news that his sailor son had been awarded the Distinguished Service Medal, and on Tuesday his name duly appeared in the list of naval honours. And the second item, Knacker's Yard Nuisance. Winchester Rural District Council, the reports of the Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Roberts, and the Sanitary Inspector, Mr. D. Denham, dealt in detail with certain nuisances at the camps regarding which complaints had been made. One of these nuisances was stated to have been at the knackering premises of Mr. Wilson. A special report from the Sanitary Inspector was read upon his visit to Mr. Wilson's premises that morning. There was a quantity of bones there which had not been removed, and one carcass was in a very offensive condition. Back even further with Jane.
And back to 200 years ago was September the 15th, 1815. Firstly, a highway robbery. A very serious accident had nearly occurred to the Prince Regent coach when within a mile of Ashby de la Zouche, about 12 o'clock a few nights ago. Some villain or villains had purposely drawn a tree directly across the road, which the leaders, seeing, though the night was dark, jumped over it, and had not the coachman fortunately had the horses sufficiently in hand instantly to stop them, the overthrow of the coach would have been inevitable. The commissioners of the road, as well as the proprietors of the coach, are strenuously exerting themselves to discover the persons concerned in this act. And secondly, we have Officer Cashiered. A general court-martial has been held at Montreal on Lieutenant M. O'Flanagan of the 8th, or King's Regiment of Foot, for misbehaviour before the enemy, in laying himself on the ground in rear of the division to which he was attached, while the regiment was actually engaged with the enemy on the 5th of July, 1814. For quitting his division without leave, whilst the regiment was actually engaged with the enemy on the evening of 5th of July, 1814, and withdrawing himself towards Fort George. The court found him guilty and sentenced him to be cashiered.
And now Heather's going to read an alternative look at the news in Belgarum Diary.
Farm movies attract 500 people. Unique cinema screenings in Cheriton and Droxford were deemed a huge success, with nearly 500 people attending over two nights. Those attending created a magical atmosphere within the backdrop of the stunning South Downs National Park, and the organisers of Film on a Farm are excited about the opportunities for 2016. Crowds of people arrived last Friday and Saturday, clutching rugs, extra coats, bean bags and inflatable chairs, and walked round choosing their preferred spot. There's a picture of them, settled down for a night at the movies under the stars on the grass with a big screen in front of them. The weather was fine on both evenings. And the films included Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which the audience were fully immersed in as their favourite quotes echoed round the beautiful natural bowl. On the Saturday, the audience enjoyed a double bill with the epic Invictus, preceded by an exclusive interview with the rugby legend Lawrence Dallaglio, which was received by a rousing cheer. The idea was created by two farmers, Chris Horn and Becca Horbett, who share a love of film and the great outdoors. This new cinema experience achieved what the organisers had hoped, an enjoyable night out at the movies under the stars in an exceptional physical space. Will other farmers seeking to diversify copy the idea?
And first person this week is by Joanna Lewis and is read by Jane.
And first person is Learning from the Old. As the new academic year starts, it's not just parents breathing a sigh of relief, but grandparents too. We're in an era where the support of the older generation has never been more needed. Young couples with small children often find themselves at breaking point. Both parents working to move up the property ladder or even to climb onto it. Grandparents become regular childminders, while former captains of industry find themselves inhabiting the world of SpongeBob SquarePants. And if you're really lucky, the bank of Nanny and Gramps funds your university degree. This beautiful relationship between young and old is slowly affecting how we value aging faces and bodies, too long ignored or sidelined. African cultures have always valued the wisdom and truths that long life and experience yields. Take Nelson Mandela. "You are all children of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do." But attitudes are changing. Recent commemorations of World War II, including touching interviews with veterans, remind us of the youthful impulses and brave hearts within older people. Older women are rebelling against the cosmetic industry that fuels insecurity. More women are letting their hair go grey. My mother, in her early 80s, has her hair in a platinum bob. She's still a total babe and now enjoys compliments on her style from teenage girls, no less. But with a population living longer, are our attitudes changing fast enough towards ageing minds and brain degeneration? 20% of the over 80s have dementia, yet widespread ignorance, fear and stigma exist. Dementia presents itself in different ways, from memory loss to very challenging behavioural and psychological symptoms. Some sufferers in care homes don't always get their symptoms recognised or treated. In the other extreme, older patients admitted to hospital with complex health problems develop temporary confusion and symptoms but get wrongly diagnosed. Add to the mix the dwindling resources available to healthcare. Frontline hospital staff are often on 12-hour shifts, attending patients who, in the worst cases, cannot feed themselves, are doubly incontinent and constantly cry out. Budgets to support upskilling in dementia have been slashed post-austerity. Dementia carers working for hard-pressed agencies are poorly paid. But it's not just a problem of resources. As one of Hampshire's senior consultants in geriatric mental health explained to me, we must all take more preventative measures to combat brain disease. Communities and neighbours can and do much to support a sufferer and their carer, however modest, from popping in to helping with the shopping. Again, bringing together young and old looks to be our best bet for the future. Getting experts into schools to discuss mental health, dementia and volunteerism is to prove successful. Meanwhile, our austerity-conscious council buys new Mini Coopers as staff incentives. It certainly incentivised me.
And Heather has the editorial comment.
Hampshire Chronicle, our 243rd year. The path to being a dormitory town. Winchester University promised not to increase its student intake over the next few years, despite the government's removal of the cap on number last year. Expansion can bring great economic and cultural benefits, though the latter depends on whether the best and brightest graduates can afford to live here. But studentification in the long term, coupled with a national decline in social housing, changes the social fabric by upping house prices. Tensions between students and locals are small beer compared to the risk of low-income families leaving for Eastleigh or Southampton. We are not a dormitory town yet, but we are on that path.
And here are some What's On items. On the Tuesday, the 29th of September, there's a lunchtime concert at the cathedral from 1 o'clock to 2 p.m. Organ fun with the cathedral organists and the free entry with a retiring collection. On Saturday, the 3rd of October, and Sunday, the 4th, Winchester Cathedral Hampshire Harvest Weekend, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Free entry to the weekend or to the cathedral all weekend. And on Sunday, the 4th, there's a harvest festival service in the cathedral at 3:30 p.m. On Saturday, the 3rd of October, Jane Austen House Museum, Chawton, talk by Professor John Mullen on Emma. Ring the museum for time and tickets, 01420 83262. 01420 83262. And Sunday, the 4th of October, at the Mayflower Theatre for tickets, Michael Palin, his 30-year tour. And you can get tickets on Southampton 02380 711 811. 02380 711 811. Tickets for The Messiah, which is on Thursday, November the 26th in Winchester Cathedral, are now on sale. And you can get them from 01962 857 275. 01962 857 275. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Finally, lighting up time ends on Friday the 18th of September at 6:44 a.m. and begins at 7:13 p.m. And on Wednesday the 23rd of September, it ends at 6:52 a.m. and begins at 7:02 p.m. Now we'll continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Heather.
Bring refugee donations to the city's collection points, which will be at the Home Shop in Cheshill Street, the Workstead in Kingsworthy, and Shake Away in Middlebrook Street. Collection points have been set up in Winchester for those looking to help refugees fleeing the Middle East. Residents and faith groups are planning their response to the growing crisis with meetings and donation days as council chiefs prepare to welcome families. Goods to be shipped to the Greek island of Kos can be donated at the Home Shop in Cheshill Street and the Workstead in London Road, Kingsworthy. Shake Away Winchester in Middlebrook Street, Walcott's Place's Stardust Years and Swanmore's St Barnabas Church are also taking donations. An estimated 1,000 refugees arrive in Kos every day as they make the treacherous journey to Europe. It comes after Winchester City Council pledged to offer homes to those escaping conflict. Organiser Roshi Ingram, collecting for the Kos for Kindness charity, has converted her garage in Longstock into a collection point. And she's also teamed up with the We Are Winchester Facebook group to organise a drop-off event next Sunday. And this collection will be held at Home Base in Eastern Lane, Winnell, between 9 and 12 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, September the 20th, that's this Sunday. The following items are most needed: warm clothing, toothbrushes, shoes or trainers with the same sized socks tucked inside, toothpaste, blankets, fleecy ones are preferred, disposable shaving razors, pop-up tents, sanitary towels, disposable nappies, soap, baby wipes and baby bottles. Residents are advised that goods can only be left during business hours. Miss Ingram hopes to crowdfund £250 towards shipping costs via her donation page at crowdfundingjustgiving.com/RoseShanackIngram1. I will read that out with a spelling at the end of this article. She said, "The heartbreaking photograph of the body of a little Syrian boy called Aylan washed up on a Turkish beach has touched us all. I am a stay-at-home mum who has been deeply moved by these unfolding events, and last week I decided that it was time to do something. I have the time and the determination to make a small difference, and that is what I am going to do. For more information, follow the appeal on Facebook at facebook.com/WinchesterandAndoverCollectionPoint. That's facebook.com/ and then WinchesterandAndoverCollectionPoint, all one word. Meanwhile, St. Peter's Catholic Church in Drury Street is holding a meeting next Thursday, September the 24th, to discuss how to respond to the crisis. And all are welcome at St. Peter's Pastoral Centre from 8 p.m. For more details about that, email tina.backhouse@googlemail.com. The Peace Jam Winchester Group is holding a collection in the city centre on Sunday. So the email address for the crowdfunding for this collection to send goods to COS is crowdfunding.justgiving.com/RoseShanackIngram1.
And there's a huge turnout to help raise charity cash. A charity helped to raise hundreds of pounds to help people suffering with dementia. The Memory Walk last Saturday was organised by the Alzheimer's Society to raise awareness of the disease. Among those taking part were staff from Bluebird Care, Winchester and Eastleigh. There were two walks, including a 1 mile walk around River Park Leisure Centre in Winchester and a 6 mile walk around the city. A spokesperson for Bluebird Care said the walks were suited for people of all ages, from grandchildren to grandparents, and it was great to see such a large amount of people taking part. At Bluebird Care, we are members of an initiative called Dementia Friends, created by the Alzheimer's Society. This is aimed at changing the way people think and talk about the condition, and has created dementia-friendly high streets in all three of our locations, Alton, Andover and Winchester. The walk raised more than £450 for the Alzheimer's Society. Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia, a chronic neurodegenerative disease that is increasingly prevalent as people live longer. And this is accompanied by a lovely photograph of a smiling group of young people surrounding one of their clients. And the young people are all wearing very attractive blue T-shirts with the bluebird, Bluebird Care and a dove on the front.
And following the 25 years ago attempts to set up a night shelter in Winchester, there is an article which is "Night Shelter Support Gave Me My Life Back." It was the last place she expected to be calling home, but when her parents moved away from Winchester, Layla moved into a night shelter. When her parents decided to move out of the area, Layla knew she wasn't going to go with them. She was unemployed and her options were limited due to mental health issues. Layla, not her real name, asked friends if any of them could put her up and eventually went to see Winchester City Council, who arranged a bed at the Winchester Church's night shelter on Drury Street. She imagined herself sleeping on a bunk bed in a room full of other homeless people and having to carry her possessions around all day. "I thought staying there was the worst-case scenario, and I was a bit scared and uncertain," says Layla, now 22, who moved into the shelter for around 6 weeks last year. "Having never taken drugs or smoked or even drunk very much, I thought I'd never fit in," she adds, admitting she had prejudices about the people who use night shelters. but Layla was surprised to find the hostel had a living room with a television, a computer room, a dining area, kitchen and quiet room. Most of all, she was delighted to be shown to her own room, which she could lock and where she could leave her things when she went out. Recovering from her mental health issues and being away from her family for the first time, she was quite vulnerable and appreciated the support from staff. We had breakfast and dinner cooked by volunteers, social activities, there was counselling available and more. The routine of having to get up and leave the shelter for the day helped to regulate me. Layla went for lunch at the Trinity Centre, where she also took part in activities such as confidence training and art sessions. Night shelter staff helped her to find more permanent accommodation in supported housing and also to claim benefits. She lived in the supported housing for 10 months, managing to find work and independent accommodation with the help of support workers. Going to the night shelter was a really good experience for me. It got rid of my prejudices about shelters and the sorts of people who go there. It made me realise that people sometimes have problems, but it doesn't mean they are bad people. It just means they might not have dealt with their problems in a healthy way. Going there definitely helped me to turn my life around, she says. I feel like I've started a new chapter in my life now. I have a permanent job, a boyfriend, and I'm living independently. Going to the night shelter really helped me. And there is a photograph of the back of Layla with long dark hair strolling confidently down a beautiful leafy road near Winchester.
Future of the Fire Service. People in Winchester can help decide the future of the fire service after chiefs agreed to let the public have their say. After 18 months of asking members of Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service for their thoughts, ideas and concerns, the Hampshire Fire Authority agreed to a public consultation. The public have 3 months to say how they would like their fire service and their nearest station to be operated. A meeting is being held in Level 10 Church, Stanmore Lane, on October the 14th. Residents can question staff from Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service and air their views from 6:30 to 9 p.m. on that day. The consultation runs for 12 weeks to December the 4th. The risk review sees 215 firefighting posts lost over the next 4 years, as the service looks to save £12.2 million. And there are two options for Winchester Fire Station on Eastern Lane. The first will be to halve the number of full-time firefighters from 28 during the day, with zero immediate firefighters overnight. The number of retained firefighters increases from 12 to 14 both day and night. Now, the second option sees the number of full-timers cut by half from 28 during the day, with two full-time firefighters overnight. Meanwhile, the number of retained firefighters reduces from 10 to 12, both day and night. Both options see one of the traditional engines replaced with a first response vehicle. At Alresford, Bishops Waltham and Wickham, the number of on-call retained firefighters would be cut from 12 to 10, and the fire engine would be replaced with a first response vehicle. Members of the Fire Authority questioned fire chiefs about the content of the risk review document, which highlights how the service will change, and presenting the report, Deputy Chief Officer Neil Odin said the service was working in a changing environment, and our service must change with these challenges. Chief Fire Officer Dave Curry, there's a smiling picture of him, stressed no stations would close and nor would there be compulsory redundancies. There are pictures of a shiny fire engine at the new Eastern Lane fire station and also a dramatic one with the silhouettes of two firefighters in action against a background of yellow flames.
Experts uncover a plane's last flight. Experts at Winchester University are hoping to unravel the mystery of a British bomber's fateful final journey in 1944. Researchers are excavating the crash site in Germany, where an RAF 10 Squadron Halifax LV-881 was shot down during the infamous Nuremberg raid on March the 30 to the 31st. They're hoping to piece together the final journey before it crashed down in Hessen, resulting in the deaths of four of the seven strong crew. Researchers have unearthed personal items at the crash site belonging to the crew, including a cap badge which belonged to air gunner Hugh Birch and a penknife. They've also found parts of the plane like perspex from the windows and plastic cable duct. The plane was attacked twice by a fighter as it approached Nuremberg and holed in the starboard wing before its number 3 fuel tank caught fire. After an unsuccessful attempt to extinguish the fire, Skipper Walter Regan gave the order to bail out. Four of the crew, Ronald Tyndall, Bill Norris, Norman Wilmot and Alan Laws, managed to escape the burning aircraft. In the chaos, though, tail gunner Tyndall fell through his harness to his death. The bomber eventually exploded above a hill near Hungensteinheim. The three survivors, Alan Laws, Norman Wilmot and Bill Norris, were later captured in Germany and sent to a POW camp. They all survived and returned home. The air crew were remembered in a memorial service at the crash site on Wednesday. Although now in deteriorating health, flight engineer Alan Laws is still alive and at the age of 92 lives near London. He was represented at the memorial service by his two sons. The Nuremberg raid saw 795 aircraft sent on an audacious bombing raid on the German city, but it came at huge cost, with 96 aircraft lost, with the loss of 700 men, and represented Bomber Command's heaviest mission loss in the Second World War. It is the second expedition of the project to investigate the crash site, and it focuses on the area where the warplane's fuselage is believed to have landed. It is hoped that the current excavations will expose archaeological findings that will throw further light on the sequence of events of the final flight. The university's senior lecturer in archaeology, Dr. Phil Martyr, said, "This study gives us a great opportunity to provide a full account of the fate of the lost aircraft and the crew for their relatives and to create a commemorative record of specific historical events. We hope our work ensures that these men's story will not be forgotten."
And now pupils dress regally to celebrate rain, a day to remember for Cheriton school children celebrating the record reign of Queen Elizabeth II last Wednesday. Villagers young and old paid their own tribute to celebrate the unique occasion of the Queen becoming our longest reigning monarch. To celebrate the record-breaking reign, the children and staff of Cheriton Primary School came to school dressed in red, white and blue. Every child was presented with a commemorative medal to help them remember the day. Head teacher Andrew Goldsworthy said, "It was great to be able to celebrate such a momentous occasion in British history, and it also enabled us to raise over £70 for charity." The bells of St Michael and All Angels in Charity rang out last Wednesday from 7 p.m. in tribute to the royal milestone. On that day, she surpassed in longevity the 63-year reign of Queen Victoria, her great-great-grandmother, who was on the throne from 1837 to 1901. For statistic lovers, the Queen's reign that day was 23,226 days, 16 hours and 23 minutes. Craig Robb, Captain of Bells, organised the tribute, and afterwards the ringers retired to the Flower Pots pub to raise a glass to the monarch. She still has some way to go to overhaul the world record, held by Sabuza of Swaziland at 82 years and 253 days. And there is a lovely photograph of all the children and staff at the school, not terribly regally dressed, but certainly in red, white and blue, stripy dresses, spotted dresses, striped trousers and tights, Union Jack T-shirts and sweatshirts, and even some Union Jack sunglasses and a hat, all gathered together, smiling broadly against a big Union Jack, holding up their medals.
Family fun at sports day. The very best of country sports were celebrated at Hampshire Country Sports Day, when more than 4,500 people crowded into Tichborne Park near Alresford, where they enjoyed a busy day on Sunday. The show saw an action-packed programme of events, including an inter-hunt competition held in the main arena, fishing demonstrations, clay pigeon shooting, and even terrier and lurcher shows. There's a picture of dog breeders, Mark and Kim Thompson, and with the owners of dogs, and of Rob Doyle giving a casting class to some young people, and Jonathan Marsh and Rob Clark with a horse. This year, the show, held on Sunday, had a new sponsor, GMK Limited, based in Fareham, who are suppliers of Benelli shotguns. Spokesman for GMK Limited, Carl Waktare, said, "We are delighted to sponsor and support the Hampshire Country Sports Day, which is a firm favourite in the Hampshire Countryside calendar. All the profits are donated to the Countryside Alliance to help with their campaigning work on behalf of rural communities, particularly opposing any ban on hunting." Show chairman Bill Towett-Drake said, "We had a fantastic show this year. Highlights of the main area included Jonathan Marshall's mounted falconry display. While the clay pigeon shooting proved particularly popular, and the new enlarged fishing area attracted a lot of attention too. Country sports are clearly engaging in a wide and varied, audience in Hampshire, with lots of people keen to try something new."
Council houses plans up to view. Residents had the chance to view controversial plans for council houses in a Winchester suburb. More than 50 people gathered at Simmons Court in Hillier Way to look at the proposals. The 13 council houses earmarked for green space in Hillier Way, Abbots Barton, are tied with plans to turn Winchester City's Den Plan ground into a community hub. As previously reported in the Chronicle, many residents are resisting the proposal. However, the plans had welcome amendments made to them, according to the secretary of Abbots Barton Community Group, Silke Kramer. Ms. Kramer said, "In my opinion, they look better because they go better with the surroundings. Many people were worried that they would be too big, and many of the houses near Oglander Road were not as big as we thought they would be, and were the same height as what is already there. They're built in such a way that the houses which are already there should not be too boxed in by the new houses." Also impressed was the councillor for St Bartholomew Ward, Dominic Hiscott. "The proposals represent an acceleration of the council's house-building programme on the estates, joining schemes at Victoria House, Samos New Head, New Queen's Head and Westman Road Week. They're the first to come forward for Abbots Barton since a planning framework was launched in 2013. Other sites at Dyson Drive, Charles Close, Hussey Close and Austin Close could be developed as the council looks to build 50 homes in the area.
And now Scouts celebrate as Revived Hut opens. The 11th Winchester Scout Group is celebrating after their historic log cabin was reopened in style following a £90,000 project. More than 150 people celebrated the reopening, including Winchester MP Steve Brine, Liberal Democrat Councillor for St Paul Ward Martin Todd, and the Mayor, Councillor Angela Clear. The log cabin in Stockbridge Road opened in 1961 and previously had heating problems which scout leaders said deterred groups from using it and was inaccessible for people with disabilities. The building has had improvements including an extended entrance, toilets for people with disabilities, more storage facilities, while its character and look has been retained. The energy efficiency has also been improved as insulation, energy-efficient doors and windows, low-energy lighting and water-saving devices have all been installed. Funding for the project came from the Veolia Environmental Trust, who awarded £65,000 through its Landfill Communities Fund. The rest was raised by the Scouts themselves from fundraising events including an appeal, a car boot sale, a quiz night and an annual bonfire night. Further help was provided by Millgate Winchester, East Francis Architects and Elliott's Builders Merchants. Leader of the scout group, Chiles Gooding, said, "The log cabin is a unique building in the heart of our community for the community. We're very lucky to have it, and we have given it a new lease of life, allowing many more young people to enjoy this space for many years to come." Executive Director of the Veolia Environmental Trust, Paul Taylor, said, "We support community and environmental projects across the UK, and it is always great to hear about the opening of one we have helped. Winchester now has an excellent venue for the whole community to use, and I hope it is enjoyed for many years to come." And there's a lovely photograph of the scouts from the 11th Winchester in celebratory mood gathering outside the log cabin. And there's the group of the younger girls and boys scouts in their light blue tops and sweatshirts. And then the older boys and girls scouts in the dark green ones. And behind them, also looking very pleased, quite a large group of adults hoping that they might be able to use the new log cabin as well.
Who knows how a Dalek got up a tree? They are the alien invaders that made generations of children hide behind the sofa. But it is a mystery how a Dalek came to be in a tree on an estate near Alsford. And we've a photograph. There's a blue Dalek halfway up a tree, a little bit hidden behind the leaves. How did it get there? Residents living nearby have taken pictures of the lost Dalek halfway up a tree at Northington Grange. The historic estate hosts the popular Grange Park Opera Festival, and the landowner is the Baring family, who say that the Dalek was a prop from a previous production. And Mark Baring, the son of Lord Ashburton, said, "The Dalek comes from an earlier production at the Grange. I think it might be Bluebeard. And someone decided to put it up to amuse the festival goers, which I rather liked, even if it does look a bit out of place in an 18th century landscape." The Dalek's appearance at the estate comes just days before the 9th opera series kicks off on Saturday with Peter Capaldi returning to play the famous Time Lord. I think it must be the 9th series of the whatever it's called.
Doctor
now, what's
Who.
That? Of Doctor Who. Thank you. So sorry. The Dalek's appearance is just days before the 9th series of Doctor Who kicks off on Saturday with Peter Capaldi returning to play the famous Time Lord. And it will be aired, the very first episode of this series, on BBC One at 7:40.
A former leader of Winchester City Council is the new chairman of the Wessex Cancer Trust. Keith Wood has been a trustee of the charity since last year. He replaces Norman Wood, who has stepped down after almost 5 years in the role. The trustees, staff and volunteers want to thank Norman for all he has done. He will stay on as a trustee of the charity and continues to look after the retail company as a director of WCT Wessex Limited. Norman said, "I'm delighted to hand over the chair to Keith and know it will be in incredibly safe hands. Keith has already brought a lot of expertise to the board, and I expect him to help us take the charity from strength to strength." Keith from Sparsholt added, "I'm really proud to take up the position. It's an exciting time for the organisation with new shops and centres opening and our fantastic new headquarters. I look forward to seeing all staff and volunteers in the future to continue learning about the great work we do."
And here we have Rhiannon discovers her artistic flair for painting. A Winchester businesswoman has rediscovered her first love. Sitting in her Winchester home studio, surrounded by paintings that have sold at a recent art event, it's hard to believe that Rhiannon John only returned to painting 18 months ago. But art was always her first love. Life, a career and three children were among the things that got in the way of her pursuing her passion. But as she watched her eldest son painting for an A-level project, she felt her first love calling her again. "He was doing a painting and I wanted to grab the brush out of his hand," says the 47-year-old from Winchester. "I thought, I can't not do it, so I went and dug out all my old art stuff." Rhiannon had loved art when she was younger, studying it at O-level and A-level and taking a foundation degree in fine art, but she felt there was no point in taking a degree in art. I didn't want to teach art, and I didn't want to be a poor artist for the rest of my life, so I did a graphic design degree instead. The decision served her well, and after working for various companies, she set up her own business 20 years ago, enjoying this outlet for her creativity. But although she did the odd art class, such as printing or life drawing, painting fell by the wayside. I think it was partly a fear that if you have a go, you won't be able to do it, she explains. If you don't try, you can tell yourself you can still do it. Also, I was busy doing graphic design work and having three children. Life just takes over. Rhianne admits that she wasn't too impressed with her first efforts once she picked up a brush again, but she loved it. I was rusty. My first few paintings were pretty hopeless, she laughs. I was terrified at first of putting paint to paper, thinking, what if I can't do it? I just did something abstract with colour. I didn't want to put too much pressure on myself. Rhianne soon found her form, though, and began showing her work on Facebook. She has been amazed at the response, with customers placing orders for prints and paintings, often commissioning original work from across Europe and the USA. It's been a massive surprise, she says. It's great that people want to pay for my work. When I started, I didn't give any thought to whether I would make some money. I just thought that I love it so much it makes me smile. And there is a delightful photograph of Rhianne tackling a large canvas with the most beautiful splashes of red and yellow and purple and bright blues against a sky, and dotted with yellow daffodils and blue iris that are integrated into this wonderfully colourful and representative painting.
Back to normal. Ex-servicemen and women, and being given the chance to be reintroduced into civilian life through placement in the NHS. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust has created potential positions for former military personnel. The new programme, the first of its kind, is aimed at former soldiers and those coming to the end of their military career. Mary Edwards, Hampshire Hospital's chief executive, said, "People working in the military share many of our values. Our hospitals offer a huge range of exciting and challenging opportunities for people who are compassionate, accountable for their actions, show respect, and are always encouraging of others. Steve Cook joined the trust when he retired from the Royal Air Force. He said, "Leaving the armed forces can be daunting. The NHS offers people the opportunity to be part of a large, supportive organisation that helps them adjust to civilian life."
Civic chiefs are looking to buy playing fields near Winchester's proposed new leisure centre to ensure that they are used for sport. Winchester City Council wants to purchase the garrison ground in Bar End amid interest from house builders and fears that development would hinder the access to the £29 million facility. Nearby residents are unaware of the multi-million pound proposals and potential impact on their playing fields, Cabinet was told last week, as it approved a public consultation on whether to refurbish River Park Leisure Centre or replace it on parts of Bar End. The council wants to build the facility on what is currently a play area, artificial pitch, county council land, and part of the King George V playing field. The neighbouring garrison ground, east of Bar End Road, is owned by Tesco. The supermarket giant is understood to have set a price in the millions, reflecting its value to developers. It was thought plans for a public buyout ended when the council ruled out building on that side of Bar End, but Cabinet heard last Wednesday that officers are still trying to negotiate a lower price. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of the council, said, "We continue to try and purchase that land and make sure that it remains a playing field for the foreseeable future." It came after a plea from Emma Back, chief executive of Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, who told Cabinet, "The garrison ground needs safeguarding for sport and recreational use and protection from house building, but it's also vital for access to the site, particularly for those travelling by bus." Asked how much the council would be willing to pay for the land, Councillor Godfrey told the Chronicle, "We're not going to waste public money filling the coffers of commercial businesses, even one as destitute as Tesco," added the corporate director Steve Tilbury. Meanwhile, St John and All Saints Councillor Janet Berry urged Cabinet to consult with the residents in Highcliffe and Bar End over the proposals.
And following on from the article about the suicide in Winchester's prison, we have Father's Rights Rooftop Protest. A campaigner held a rooftop protest at Winchester Cathedral on Saturday in memory of Father's Rights advocate Hayden Burton. Robert Carwardine scaled the roof at 4 a.m. with a banner bearing Mr. Burton's name and stayed for more than 6 hours. That afternoon, three men from New Fathers for Justice, one dressed as Batman, climbed the historic arch and replaced the Queen's standard with a Superman tea towel. They claimed to fight on behalf of men who are having to pay the courts to see their children. Mr. Burton, 42, found hanging in his cell at Winchester Prison in July, was a well-known campaigner for the group, demonstrating with a loud hailer and Superman costume in the city centre. But Mr. Carwardine distanced himself from the New Fathers for Justice, telling the Chronicle he was protesting over issues including penal reform and family courts under the Justice for Hayden Burton. It has absolutely nothing to do with the Fathers for Justice or New Fathers for Justice or any other fathers group, he said, adding it was quite upsetting this impression was given. He said Justice for Hayden Burton was established by the family to continue his work. Mr. Carwardine went on to protest outside Winchester Prison after coming down from the cathedral, which he had climbed down using maintenance scaffolding. They did offer to leave the banner up until Monday, which was a nice gesture, he added, but we weren't there to cause trouble, we were there to make a point. New Fathers for Justice campaigner James Dennis said 17 members were protesting in Winchester on Saturday. He said, "We want the government to change the family courts, the way that fathers are getting pushed towards the courts just to see their children." And there is a photograph of the top of the cathedral with Robert Carwardine protesting and a poster which says, "Hayden Burton, stop fracking with our kids, Mr. Cameron," on it.
Crackdown as police launch campaign. More than 2,000 motorists in Hampshire have been prosecuted for risking their lives and others by failing to wear seatbelts, it has been revealed. Figures show 2,285 drivers in the county and the Isle of Wight were caught not strapping up in the past 3 years. The statistics show 12 fatal collisions and 2 crashes, resulting in serious injuries, were caused over the same period by motorists failing to properly belt up. The revelation comes as Hampshire Constabulary launched their part of a European-wide crackdown on motorists driving without their seatbelts. The Tisbol seatbelt enforcement campaign climaxes on Sunday, rounding off 7 days of police officers around the continent coordinating seatbelt checks. Last year, 4 fatal collisions were recorded in the region, following 5 the previous year, when 2 serious injury crashes also occurred. It came after 3 fatal collisions in 2012. Motorists caught driving without seatbelts are fined up to £500 or offered a driver training course, provided they were not caught previously in the last 3 years, highlighting the dangers of their actions.
Police initiative to curb problems. Police have introduced special measures to stamp out antisocial behaviour in a Winchester suburb. Residents in Wick say youths have been congregating at night outside shops in Stony Lane and St Barnabas Church in Fromond Road. In the last 3 weeks, police have been called to deal with youths drinking near the church, where a window was smashed and graffiti was sprayed, and other noise complaints. A conservatory on Fromond Road was smashed during a fight, and a 33-year-old man was assaulted in Fromond Road by 5 youths. Now police have powers to disperse groups in Stony Lane, Fromond Road and Trussell Crescent. The powers, which are called Section 35 orders, can be used for up to 48 hours at a time, and if the youths are seen in the area again, they could be prosecuted and spend up to 3 months in custody. Residents have welcomed the move and say more should be done to tackle youth crime. One resident, Gary Parfitt, 69, said the problem is the worst he has seen. Mr. Parfitt said, "Antisocial behaviour is a real problem. It has always been a bad area for it, and I've lived here for 63 years, and it's got really bad. But I do not think it's the kids' fault, it's parents, because they're letting them out late at night. It is a lack of things for them to do and a lack of supervision from parents. Unless something is done, it's going to get worse." A worker at Class 1 Dry Cleaners in Stony Lane, who asked not to be named, also expressed concerns about youths causing a nuisance. He said, "It has been happening for 6 months, especially on the weekend. They will be in the front of our door and ringing our bell and running off. And if you ask them why do you ring the bell, they just laugh at you. It intimidates customers. The youths are sitting outside sometimes and they come in and throw merchandise on the floor." At a Police and Communities Together packed meeting at All Saints Church Hall last Thursday, PCSO Robert Window said, "We are sending out a message now because we have had so many complaints, and the number of antisocial behaviour calls we have had is about 15 to 20. Parish Administrator for St Barnabas Church, Ben Whittaker, says the church is working with the young people that have been causing the problems.
And now residents' memorial party. Winchester residents have gathered for the fifth year to remember a neighbour at a street party. The party in St Catherine's View honours resident Dennis Kimber, a retired postman who died in July 2010. Dennis first had the idea for the outdoor party for residents in St Catherine's View, St Catherine's Road, Canute Road and Highcliffe Road. Despite the appalling summer weather and the poor forecast for the day, in true British fashion it was decided the show must go on. Thankfully, the weather was kind, the bunting was raised, the barbecues were wheeled out along with tables, chairs and food. Friends, family and neighbours came together to enjoy a sense of community. The day ended with traditional gathering around the fire pit to share a glass, a memory and a moment of reflection. And there's a photograph of the street party all gathered together, from tiny babies to quite elderly residents in wheelchairs. And above them is all the bunting they've hung up. And behind them, there are sun or rain umbrellas over tables of food. And they're toasting Dennis Kimber and having a lovely joint celebration.
Hospice revamp. More than 1,000 people had their first look at the revamped Naomi House Children's Hospice. The hospice in Sutton Scotney had been closed for 19 months for the refurbishment, with children being cared for at Jack's Place next door. It has now celebrated a £4 million refurbishment by holding an open day and fete on Saturday, which saw people from across the county take a look at the new look facilities. The changes include hoists placed throughout the hospice building, piped oxygen in every room, and a never-before-seen heating system which can maintain precise temperatures in each room, new sensory equipment, and many other changes.
And now Santa joins in round table festivities. Winchester Round Table is launching a new festive initiative to raise money for good causes. The tablers are introducing the Winchester Santa Sleigh, which will be transporting Santa Claus around the city each December. The sleigh will be driven around each evening between December the 12th and the 19th, and charities will collect door-to-door in exchange for sweets. All profits raised will go directly to the charities that have provided the volunteers. Steve Cross, Santa Sleigh chairman, said, "Winchester now has a fantastic reputation as the Christmas capital, but we have always missed having the man himself around town. Young people across the city will be able to hear the magic of Christmas in their own streets and see Santa Claus from their own homes." The sleigh routes will be published closer to Christmas, and the Round Table would like to hear from charities who would be interested in collecting between December the 12th and December the 19th.
And another brief item about charity. Abandoned bikes found in Winchester District are to be given to charity. Winchester City Council has agreed to donate bicycles left for more than 3 months. Abandonment notices are placed on bikes after 2 weeks, and they're taken off the street after another 2 weeks, and the council will then hold them at its depot for around 2 months to await collection from owners before giving them to local charities. An average of one bike a month is reported to the council.
And now, thanks to Hotel. A charity which aims to help disabled servicemen and women has thanked a Winchester hotel for hosting a recent conference. Hounds for Heroes gathered at the Holiday Inn at Mourne Hill for a training session for injured and disabled men and women from the armed forces and civilian emergency services, as well as their canine counterparts. Those travelling from far away were put up for free by the hotel. Alan Parton, Hounds for Heroes vice chairman and founder, said, "As Hounds for Heroes steadily grows and develops, successfully creating more working partnerships between the dogs and their human partners, there is a natural requirement to be more effective, to do things better each time, and work more professionally. Once again, Hounds for Heroes was very privileged to have the opportunity to work again with the Holiday Inn Winchester team during our recent 2-week residential course. Our ethos is to do things better for certainly one that the staff at the Holiday Inn Winchester embrace with such enthusiasm, with solutions, not problems, to the game plan."
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending 18th of September 2015. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy. Thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.